Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, will join us in 1 hour. We'll get Hutton's thoughts on what he saw from the preseason game on Friday, his initial thoughts on the Titans 53-man roster that was finalized yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. D. Mace, Willie D., how we doing?
Doing wonderful. I told you right before the show there's going to be some exciting things in the sky today. Well, one big exciting thing, the blue moon today. It's going to be big, blue, and bright. So go outside tonight.
Maybe that's an omen.
Yeah, go outside
MTSU
tonight.
Or TSU.
Absolutely. It's an omen for MTSU, TSU. Hey, this could be a sign, you know, that the universe is on your side.
A cosmic sign.
Absolutely. So a big blue moon tonight. Last night I was able to see Saturn in the background of the moon. That was exciting. So I'm a stargazer, so I love it. So
wow,
yeah,
D-Mace.
Just a little tidbit of things.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm not just radio and you know, sports, man.
I did know about the blue moon. I was surprised. I would not have had I not been at a neighbor's house last night, and my neighbor pointed it out to me.
Oh,
I was like, hey, look at the moon.
It was
like,
bright
tomorrow
yesterday.
Tomorrow is the blue moon.
Yeah, last night it was bright. Tonight, blue moon.
Forgive me.
It's like we're having
you
a
didn't
side
know about the blue moon?
It's like we're having a side conversation
I didn't
over
know
here.
What that, what, I didn't know that it was tonight. Is it actually blue?
Yeah,
like, what is a blue
it's
moon?
Going, it's going to give off like a blue hue because it's going to be so big and so bright. So, yeah, go out tonight.
I don't want to put
grab
you on the spot, D-Mace, but why is it turn blue?
I didn't go too deep into it.
I didn't want to put you on the spot.
He just looks at it, Nick. He doesn't know the reason.
Nick, I just look at it. I know some stars and
I'm a man of curiosity.
Things like that. Like last night, I was out and, you know, saw a shooting star. Then
You saw a shooting star last night?
Yeah. You see those all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah. If you
well,
look up in the
I
sky.
Why have I been programmed to think that shooting stars happen, you know, once every million years?
They happen all the time. You just got to look in the sky. Just look up. Everybody. Yeah. At night, just look up.
Don't look
Spend
at your phone.
Spend about an hour. Exactly. Don't look at your phone. Cut off the lights around your house, like outside. And if you don't live in a city.
Yeah.
If you live sort of outside the city where the lights are not as bright, turn your lights out. Just look up in the sky for about an hour. You're bound to see something. Like I saw a shooting star last night.
How do I know if it's a shooting star or an airplane?
A shooting star just goes. It's just like that and you see it.
Yeah.
But last night I saw something. Don't know what it was. I believe it was a satellite. But
or
it could have been something else. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure it was a satellite. So
now we're really getting into some.
Yeah. But if you look up in the sky long enough at night, you're bound to see something. And it's just amazing. I love just stargazing. It's my like a hobby of mine. Just it's relaxing as well. You know,
I'm sure it is.
Nicely
love that
calm
nice.
Music. You know, just
see a couple
there.
Aliens up there.
Yeah,
in the
I
sky.
Want to see an alien. I want to see one. Bad.
Do we have an astronomy major that can text our text line and explain why
the moon is
the
blue?
The moon turns blue. What creates
blue?
Just
had a caller. He said that two full moons in 1 month cause a blue moon.
Ah.
But,
so last night
but
was one.
Like, what about the physics? Like, what creates the light? That's
the hue
that
of a blue.
That is a great
blue.
Question, Willie.
Yeah, the hue of a blue. So.
I knew some people at Vanderbilt, teammates of mine, that took astronomy, thinking that it was going to be awesome. You're going to be looking at the stars.
Food. They got food.
And after a couple of weeks, they're like, man, there's a lot of math in this class, a lot of physics. And they're like, I'm dropping this class. This is too hard, man. There's too much. I thought we were just going to be out looking at stars.
Nah, that's not how it works.
I've had a lot of friends that mixed up astronomy with astrology.
Yeah.
And they realized, we're not talking about Pisces and Sagittarius.
Nah,
like, we're talking about what you know, the Big Dipper. Like, I'm good. No thanks. I'll pull out of this.
Exactly.
We'll keep our eye in the sky tonight for the blue moon. Mm-hmm. D-Mace, I expect a full blue moon report tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Also, a very big day yesterday as far as the Tennessee Titans were concerned. Big day for the moon today. Big day for the Titans yesterday. 53-man roster was released. The Titans had three quarterbacks. Don't think that was a surprise to any of us. Three running backs, Derrick Henry, Tajay Spears, and Julius Chestnut. Seven receivers. But as we talked about yesterday, we expect Kyle Phillips to probably go on IR after the 53-man roster was initially released, because just a reminder to everyone, if you're placed on IR before the 53-man roster is released, you're on IR for the entirety of the season. So Kyle Phillips on the 53-man roster.
Haskins is on IR before the 53-man roster.
And Hassan Haskins has been placed on the commissioner's exempt list, which is where I think that
he probably
but for Roger Goodell
to be right now, considering you don't know what's going on with his legal situation. So, you know,
and he does have a hearing today, so we'll have some updates about the about Hassan Haskins in his future.
Yes,
three tight ends, 10 offensive linemen. Nicholas Petitfrere was not on that initial 53-man list because of that suspension at the beginning of the season. Five D linemen, five linebackers, four outside linebackers, five corners, five safeties, and then your three specialists. Willie and D Mace, initial takeaways, thoughts, and any surprises from the initial 53-man roster submitted yesterday.
I didn't see. I mean, listen, we can go to the bottom of the roster and start looking at guys that, you know, will either play on special teams or will not get much playing time, or will be game time decisions each and every week. We can sort of look at those guys and kind of figure. But I don't think there was any surprises, at least to me. You know, they kept seven wide receivers, but Kyle Phillips will go on IR, so that's six. I wonder what they will do once Kyle Phillips come back. Will they keep seven, or will they put a guy on practice squad once Kyle Phillips comes back?
And then offensive line as well. Dylan Raidens was on the initial 53, but I would expect the Titans to put Dylan Raidens on IR too.
Exactly.
So that would leave two more roster spots once those two go on IR.
What I am curious about, because they break them down into like their actual positions, like center, guard, tackle. They kept three centers. Now, you know, Corey Levin can play both center and guard, and I'm sure Xavier Newman can do the both as well. So it's not necessarily they're going to play center, but they're more so swing possible center guards. I'm surprised they kept three of them. But with an offensive line that isn't proven, you got to keep as many as you can, because if one of those guys go down, then you're going to be SOL if you don't have guys to back them up. So, but I am surprised they kept, if you break it down into positions, they kept three centers. So we'll see.
I thought a long time ago, you know, that if they're going to keep three quarterbacks, is that going to strain the roster? I remember thinking that in the summer, and I don't think it did at all. I think that shows you the depth is questionable here. I didn't see anybody on the list like, wow, it probably really hurt to cut that guy. And even the ones that they cut that we know, I think they will not have any trouble getting them back on the practice squad if they want them. So I don't know that this was that difficult a decision. And I think maybe we make too much of who makes the 53, because in the last few years, with the expanded practice squads and the different rules where it's easier to shuttle guys up and down, it's really a bigger roster. A lot of these guys will be in the mix. You guys mentioned Kinsey. Like, unless somebody signs him, which I'd be surprised if they did, he'll be in the mix. He'll be there for them to call up if they need to. The other thing I'm curious about is, with the state of the roster, do they put in a couple of waiver claims somewhere around the league? You know, you see a tweet come up here and there about a guy that looks like he might bring something to the table as an offensive lineman that started a certain amount of games, or a defensive back who's got some experience under his belt. Are there a couple guys that they take a shot at, knowing that finishing 7-10 last year as opposed to 12-5, they might actually grab one of these two guys if they want them?
That's something that Trevor Maddich talked about yesterday on Jared's show. He said that he thinks it's almost certain that the Titans are going to go after another offensive lineman, whether that's a waiver claim before 3 o'clock today or whether that's just picking up an offensive lineman from someone else's practice squad. He said that he expects the Titans to do that for depth purposes. I assume just for depth purposes because you're already down to Chris Hubbard as your starting right tackle. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to Chris Hubbard, but I don't know how much confidence that really gives you in the quality of depth on the offensive line. So that I think that's a fair point. And I think that's another thing to keep in mind, too, with the initial 53-man roster is you sign these guys to the 53-man roster. They make the team. But the Titans also have every right to go pick up whatever other player on any other practice squad. So you sign 53, you want to sign another one? Well, you can cut another one from the 53 and move him down to the practice squad. Or just cut him, release him. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well. Is this is the 53-man roster now, but things can change, especially until 3 o'clock today once the waiver wire claims.
Yeah, because I'm sure there will be not necessarily big names on the market, but there will be guys that have played some snaps, a lot of snaps in this league, particularly at the offensive line position that the Titans can then potentially pick up via the draft, meaning via the free agency and cuts. One guy on there is Dan Quisenberry. He was once a Titan. He got cut by Buffalo, I believe. Is this a guy that they look at and say, he knows our system pretty much. You know, guys are familiar with him. We're familiar with him as a coaching staff. Do we bring a guy like that back? You know, because I'm sure he would be an upgrade to the bottom half of your depth chart in regards to offensive linemen. So guy like that, or you sift through other teams, you know, cut down list and try to find a guy that you are familiar with, guy that is either played in the league that you've scouted or a guy that you scouted in college that, you know, you wanted to bring in as a free agent, but another team got him before you could off him contract. So that could happen. But I am, you know, Trevor's right. I think, you know, the roster today will not be the roster come the first game of the season, I don't think.
Anything can happen.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the flexibility there. But the Titans' initial 53-man roster is out. Some more of our takeaways from the Titans' initial 53-man roster coming up next. Plus, we have known since Rand Carthon has come to Nashville, since he's been named the GM of the Tennessee Titans, that it's a collaboration between he and Mike Vrabel. But how do we think that dynamic worked when finalizing the initial 53? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
So how do you get the confidence level that what you've done through practice translates in the game, or is that just what you see against New Orleans is what you get?
I'm not really sure. I know that we've had some really good examples of us making plays against Minnesota, us making plays in the game against Minnesota, us having, you know, running a 4-minute operation, closing the game out. We're going to need to do that, hopefully, in 17 games. I don't think it'll be 17, but I'd like it to be. But we've also had examples of us, you know, playing man coverage, getting off the field, affecting the quarterback. We were able to throw the ball. You know, one thing I thought was really cool coming out of the game was that we went in with some specifics on special teams and on defense and on offense. And, you know, we averaged 10.5 yards an attempt in the game on offense. So we were able to hit some plays down the field. We got a really cool DPI penalty that's going to go unnoticed from Chris Moore, but came back. Guy wasn't playing the ball. Those are things we coach. So I guess that translated. We talked about the net on the punt team. Yeah, we worked that. We worked drills on that. And then to go and be able to show the guys after the game that here's the net. You know, we're not following guys down maybe in the same lane like we were in Minnesota. Or after the Vice, you know, incident with the returner, with Kyle, which is unacceptable. You know, early on, all our vices on the punt return were good. You know, so those are things that I think that we can point to. When we go in and say, hey, here's a focus, this is what we're concentrating on. Let's see if we can't get it done. And then when you do it, then, you know, we showed the team on, I guess, whatever it was yesterday.
That was Mike Vrabel at the podium. What he has seen from practice translating on to the field for the three preseason games. And I have to think a portion of that was in mind when cutting down to the initial 53-man roster. Hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. So just one more of my final takeaways from looking at the initial 53-man roster. Now, remember, this is not going to be the roster from now until January forever and ever, amen. There is going to be a whole lot of changes that happen to this roster, whether it be the Titans picking up waiver wire claims, whether it be the Titans picking up players from other practice squads. When you do that, you have to cut players on your 53-man roster. You know, game day rosters are going to change. So things are going to be different. Just because this is what the roster looks like today doesn't mean this is what the roster is going to look like tomorrow or week one against the New Orleans Saints. But just the initial 53-man roster, one of my takeaways was there's a whole lot of rookies on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
5 UDFAs in all 6 of their draft picks. 11 rookies on the initial 53. And I think there's two ways that you can look at that. One is good for the rookies for beating out maybe some more experienced or veteran players and getting on the 53. The second way of looking at that is, you know, your depth at the bottom of the roster is a little bit of a concern when you've got 5 UDFAs that are going to be, you know, more of your depth pieces. Again, that's going to change. Very much so that is going to change. But initially, that was one thing that really stood out to me is the just lack of experience with their 11 rookies on this 53.
I think part of it is the salary cap. I think of where they are cap-wise with a lot of money tied into a relatively low amount of players like Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard. And so you need a certain amount of guys who make the league minimum to get in there. There's not as much room for those mid-level free agents. And I think it also falls into line with one of the things that we identified as a theme all summer long is that you've got a team that's got one eye on what happens after Ryan Tannehill, Kevin Byard, and Derrick Henry are too old to keep us afloat, right? What happens after those guys are done playing? And how do we compete this year?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they spent money on DeAndre Hopkins. They kept the veterans together to run it back one more time. So when to do that, you have, I think, a little top-heavy roster, and then on the bottom, you've got to have rookies. You got to have undrafted free agents make the team. So that's what I see. It's that right in between, we're not blowing it up and rebuilding, and we're not all in with all veterans because this is where they are right now. They're sort of in between, and we'll see how that looks once they start playing.
Well, they have no choice. This isn't, you know, you got 11 guys that are, you know, basically first year players.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just indicative of your roster, period. It's an indictment on your roster, that, you know, your roster's not that good enough, not taken away from the 11 guys and what they did in preseason to show that they should make this team. But it is indicative of how your roster isn't as good as it has been in previous years. You know, you had UDFs, you know, that show out like Caleb Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, he would show it out on anybody's
team.
He
should have made the roster.
Yeah,
I'm glad that he has made the roster.
Anybody's team.
He just gets to the quarterback.
Yeah, so, but then you have other guys that, you know, may have played well, but if there are other teams, depending on how that team was structured, they probably wouldn't have made the 53. Not saying they wouldn't have made their practice squad, mm-hmm. but not the 53. This is just an indictment on what has been happening the last 3 or 4 years with this roster. And it's gotten to a point where, you know, good for the 11 guys that were drafted and first-year players or, you know, undrafted guys that they brought in. Good for those guys again. They worked hard, good. But again, it's just indicative of what the roster is. They have three or four guys, possibly, maybe, and I'm maybe stretching with four, that are players in this league, proven players. They have just that many on defense. So you're talking about really eight people that have done something in this league, considerable amount of something in this league that you consider them top-tier players. After that, it's just you're trying to piece together your roster. So, again, good for them that they made it.
Yeah.
I know how hard it is, and I know the anxiety that goes along with, you know, working so hard and then, you know, trying to figure out if I did enough to make the team. But I don't know if this we need to go back and see, you know, within the last 5 or 6 years, how many first-year guys, whether draft picks or UDFs, that have made this roster within the last 5 years, like each year. Because I think this year's has been the highest. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this year has been the highest amount of guys that first-year guys, let's just say that, first-year guys that have made the team. And I think it's just indicative of the roster. And I think we've always discussed that the roster is just not where it needs to be right now.
I'm curious how it compares to other teams. And, and one thing comes to mind when
that's
you say that, D-Mace, because I've never done the study. That would take some
time. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To compare Titans year in and year out, and also what do other teams do. But one factor is, let's take Jacksonville. Jacksonville still has Trevor Lawrence on the first contract. That makes it easier to have more money to get those mid-level free agents, those guys who might have a couple of more years on it. Whereas the Titans, like you said, they don't. Rand Carthen comes in, he doesn't have much of a choice right now when you've got the situation they have. Now, I'm curious in the future years, as Carthen starts being able to maybe have a little more flexibility to build the way he wants to, and it's more the decisions he's made and not the decisions he's making off of the previous guys, where he goes from there. And what happens when, in theory, you've got Will Levis or Malik Willis quarterbacking, who, you know, it's a fraction of the cost of what they're paying Tannehill. How do you use that extra money to try to strengthen the roster up and down? Because that's what they're going to need. Those guys are going to need a really good supporting cast around them to be successful.
And I do wonder, though, because that's a fair point, if you need some sort of value when you're looking at the bottom of the roster, when you're looking at depth guys. I think that this team has performed its best when you get the most out of some of your more underpaid players. I don't mean underpaid, lower end of the salary kind of guys. But when I look at, you know, the decisions to, and I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but, you know, Colton Dowell made the initial 53-man roster. Well, I don't think that, let's say, Reggie Roberson would make significantly more money than Colton Dowell would. So why the decision to sign Colton Dowell to the initial 53, maybe over a Reggie Roberson or a, you know, an Otis Reese over a Ben Neiman?
Yeah. You know, in that particular one, it seemed like to me that Roberson played a little bit better in camp than McDowell, but then he was a trap. He was a draft pick. Colton was a draft pick. So it's like, okay, we got a draft pick. We got this guy who's both of them. Yeah, he may be a little bit ahead of him, but this was our draft pick. So we're leaning toward keeping our draft pick as opposed to another guy. And they both played, because I don't think, was Roberson a draft pick of theirs? I'm not sure he was a draft pick. He wasn't a draft pick this year. I know that. It may have been in previous years, but I know he wasn't a draft pick this year. So that's because you're right.
I'm pretty sure it's a UDFA.
Yeah, because you're right. The money isn't, it's not like one guy's making $3 million and the other guy's making $1 million.
Yeah.
They're both making right around the same. But I think, again, it means more we can hold on to your draft pick if the play is close, if both guys are close to one another as far as what we've seen and evaluated them. I tend to probably keep my draft pick than I do the other guy.
I agree. And so, I think there's a little bit of ego with the scouts and the GM. Like, they want to be smart with the guys they picked,
yeah.
I think, to some degree. So I think there's a benefit of the doubt for the draft pick over the undrafted free agent. Yeah. But not that there aren't undrafted free agents represented on the roster, as you pointed out. There's
absolutely
plenty of them.
Tier Tart was an undrafted free agent. And now look at him. Look what Tier Tart does for this team. But I kind of want to continue the conversation coming up next. And that point that you just made, Willie, about maybe the ego that's involved. Mm-hmm. Is that the right way to run the team? And who had the final say when constructing the initial 53? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
I don't think that matters because I think the word and what we truly believe here is collaborating. I think all that comes down to, in my opinion, is a matter of ego. Mike and I, we're here to work together, and we're going to bring the people in here that we see fit, and we're not going to see it the same way all the time, but he and I will have the mutual respect to be able to work through that, and we'll get the right people in here.
So that was Rand Carthon in his introductory press conference back in January when he was first named the GM of the Tennessee Titans. That's when we heard the word collaboration maybe, over under 174 times.
Yeah, probably over.
Over, yeah, that's right. That between
synergy.
Synergy, fusion, lockstep, whatever corporate buzzword you want to use. We heard a lot of it, that between Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel and Amy Adams Strunk, that they were going to collaborate in the decisions, the big decisions surrounding this football team. Roster construction being one of those things. And that's something that we talked about a ton around draft time, was really whose pick is it? Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, who has final say when drafting? And I think it's still a relevant conversation in the 53-man roster construction of who had final say in the initial 53-man roster.
It's something that we've been debating the whole time. Because,
for almost a year now.
Yeah, ever since they fired John Robinson. And we were saying, okay, the next guy, what does this do to Vrabel's decision-making? If we presume that the final say went to John Robinson before, because it was more of the traditional model, the collaboration, you can say that all you want, and they're going to continue to say that. But you do wonder, there have to be some tie-breaking procedures.
Right.
There are going to be some times where it's, okay, we can't really decide. You think one way, I think the other. What do we do? Mm-hmm. So who is the guy that makes the final? Somebody has to be the guy, right?
Somebody has. I mean, I understand they're not going
to
let
as much as you want to be collaborative and everything, and you hope the other guy says, you know, right? Last time we went with yours. Mm-hmm. Today we're going to go with mine.
Let's rock, paper, scissors.
It's just my turn. Yeah. Or rock, paper, flip a coin. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is interesting. I don't know how different it is. Mm-hmm. I sense that Vrabel's got a little bit more in there. I don't know if I would go as far as to say if Vrabel wants his guy, he's going to get his guy. But Vrabel had a hand in help in getting Rand Carthon hired. I think that means something. Whereas the other way, you know, it wasn't always like that.
I think for starters, I think and Rand sort of alluded to this in his introductory press conference of me coming in and me sort of, I'm not coming in here to, you know, move anybody out or wreck shop or revamp anything. I'm coming in and basically I'm just observing. I'm evaluating. I got to do my own evaluation. I think this first year, he probably, because he's the new guy coming in, he probably sort of, you know, okay, I'm going to lean more toward, you know, Vrabel's thinking because he's been here. He knows this team. He knows the type of roster he wants to assemble, so I'm going to lean on him in regards to players. Now, I'm going to have some say, but he knows this roster better than I do. Even though I've evaluated this roster, he knows them individually better than I do. So this first year, I'm going to lean on Vrabes to sort of get, you know, the roster that he wants. Then moving forward, it has to be more of a collaborative thing. It has to be more of a, okay, you evaluate this guy this way, I evaluate him this way, you know, now let's bring all the coaches in and all the scouts in and sort of let that be kind of like the tiebreaker in a sense. I think next year's roster, he will have more of a say. I'm not saying he didn't have it this year, but I think when you come in as a first-year guy, just like a first-year player, when you come in, even if you're a veteran, especially when you're a veteran player and you've done a lot in this league, you come in and you don't want to all of a sudden just come in and say, I want it this way.
Right.
No
you
music.
Defer. Exactly. You defer like, to the older guys.
I defer to the older guys that have been here. And once I figure everything, you know, once I figure the landscape out, once I start building, you know, relationships with people in the locker room, now I can allow my voice to be heard the next following season or going into the next following season or in players, you know, situation, middle of the season, somewhere around there. So I'm pretty sure that's sort of what Rand was thinking in regards to this roster and leaning more on the guys that have been here rather than I got my evaluation, but I'm going to defer to the head coach and the guys that have been here in regards to, you know, if it comes down to that, in regards to who we keep.
I think you're dead on. I think that is a smart approach by Rand Carthon, by the way. It's not a power trip. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, I'm young. I know what I'm doing, but let me use what I've got around me. Let me build the trust. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like I always thought of it like it's a pickup game, right? If you're in a pickup basketball game and you're the new guy and you know you're with some good players, you don't go and jack three three-pointers the first three times down the court, right? You show the guys you could play. Mm-hmm. Like you show up at the playground, you want people to want to play with you, right? Yeah. If you lose the game, you want the next team to pick you up. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to go in there like, look at this guy. This guy's just going to jack up three-pointers. He's a ball hog. We don't want him. So you set screens for people. You're going to try to make some hustle play. You know, you're going to try to build and have people go, yeah, I like that guy. All right, let's pass him the ball. I think that same dynamic is at work here. I think that's dead on.
I think that Mike Vrabel has the final say. And maybe that changes in the future. I don't know. But for right now, I think that Mike Vrabel has the final say. And this is why I think that matters, is because we were talking about, well, you know, what's the process behind deciding to sign, you know, your seventh round pick in Colton Dowell versus a Reggie Roberson? We looked it up at the break. They each make the same amount of money this year. They each make $750,000 this year. So what's the science behind that? What's the motivation? How do you pick one guy over another? When you're talking about the bottom of the roster, like, we know why DeAndre Hopkins is making the team. Mm-hmm. But that's why I think that matters. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, it's the draft pick involved in it. It's the draft investment into Colton Dowell versus Reggie Roberson being a UDFA. But that doesn't sound like very much like a Vrabel thing to do. Like, that doesn't sound very Vrabel-esque to put your ego ahead of maybe what's best for the team. And maybe they see something in Colton Dowell that I just haven't seen this preseason.
Well,
I've seen more from Reggie Roberson than I have Colton Dowell. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't sound very Vrabel-esque. A guy who says, we're going to do whatever it takes to help the team, but to do what's best for the team, and then turn around and give the guy the nod because of the draft investment.
But I think that's a good point, too, about what Derek's bringing to the table of Rand Carthon being the young guy that wants to be collaborative, defers to the establishment, the veteran coach. But if Mike Vrabel's smart, he's going to say, okay, what have we not done well in the past? Where do I feel like I know? And where should I be leaning on Rand Carthon and the scouting department? Like those guys that made that decision to draft him, Mike Vrabel probably didn't do the extensive homework on Colton Dowell that Rand Carthon and the scouts did, right? They have a more of a knowledge base. And if it's close, I think that's where – I don't think it's just ego. It's also, look, we did our homework on this guy. He's coming along. And hopefully Mike Vrabel will see this. You know, I'm also curious. They might be right on the same page for 7 of every 10 players.
They could be.
It's just what happens – you're asking the question. It's a good one. What happens on the 2 or 3 that we disagree on? You know, how do we break those ties? And who defers to who? And I think it's probably likely that for whatever reason, Rand Carthon's like, all right, coach, I see you. Mm-hmm. We're going to go with you right now. And then over time, as they learn more about each other, maybe that process changes a little bit.
Well, it's about earning. It's the trust factor. And trust meaning both ways. Mm-hmm. I'm the new GM. I'm going to trust you. Because you know this roster better than me, so I'm going to trust you if it comes down to those one or two players that we disagree, okay? I'm going to trust you because this is how you want your roster as the head coach built. So I'm going to trust that you're doing it, you know, that this guy is going to be beneficial for us to keep. Now, if it comes down to, okay, I've trusted you a few times on these, you know, these last 10 guys, let's just say, and say it's not working, then, okay, now I think I believe I need to take more of a role in not just the top of the roster or the middle of the roster, but the bottom of the roster, because mm-hmm. it seems like, you know, I trusted that that would happen with you, but it hasn't worked for whatever reason. So now I can sort of, I can get my thoughts in or interject my thoughts into who we're going to keep and who we're not going to keep. But I mean, sports is all about ego. If you don't think ego is in sports and is rampant, something's wrong with you.
I know.
It comes in
like,
a little.
Does it sound very not Vrabel?
Vrabel has the biggest ego on that team.
Totally.
He has the big, but.
But I have to believe that when Vrabel says we're going to do what's best for this football team, I have to believe him.
Oh, yeah. I believe him when he says that. He's trying to do what's best for the team. And I think everybody that echoes that sentiment, they believe it in their heart. Whatever we're doing for the best of the team. I may not necessarily, if I'm a head coach and the GM says, no, I want to keep this guy because I think this is best for the team. Mm-hmm. And you may say, okay, but you may not necessarily like the player in a sense, but you're doing what's best for the team because everybody else seems to be on board with keeping this one guy or two guys. And I'm the only guy that's like, I don't know. But, I mean, if y'all think it's best for the team, he's not a bad player, but if y'all think it's best for the team, then okay, let's do what's best for the team, you know?
Right.
So I think that's more or less how it operates. Again, I think, you know, I think Vrabel's ego is just as big as anybody else's.
Maybe even bigger.
But and when I say that, it's not a bad thing. You know, you got to have an ego in this business. When you're in a business like this, whether it's sports or entertainment, there has to be an ego there.
Right.
You have to believe you are the best at what you're doing.
And we know Vrabel is petty.
Yeah.
And that comes from a place of ego. And mm-hmm. you're right. It's not a bad thing unless it starts to hurt
exactly,
the
unless
team.
It starts to hurt everybody.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Got a bunch of texts on this, so we're right to your thoughts on the Titans' initial 53-man roster. Caroline, Willie, D-May say tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will kick off at 6 p.m. at home against Alabama A&M with pregame beginning at 4:30 p.m. You can hear all the coverage on 102.5 The Game app and thegamenashville.com. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in just over 10 minutes. Hey, sign up for Silly Underdog Picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. Make your picks today at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app as week one of college football kicks off this weekend. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Silly Underdog Picks makes its return tomorrow at noon. Pumped for it. I'm ready for it. Let's get some of your thoughts on the Titans' initial 53-man roster.
Well,
phone lines are driven by WillScanahan.com.
Should we quickly deliver the news of the waiver claim?
Yes, waiver claims have been released. This is by Tom Pelissero.
So the Titans have claimed a guy that I have not heard of. So I'm looking up his bio right now. Kendall Vildor, cornerback out of Georgia Southern. He was claimed off the Bears roster. He was a Bears draft pick in 2020. He has he has played 44 games in the league. Started 21. So in the old, you never have enough corners, they claimed a corner.
There you go.
He's got a Disney villain, Kendall Vildor.
He does sound like a character out of
maybe... Who was Voldemort?
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it was Lord of the Rings.
Maybe Harry
Potter.
One
was
of the
he
two.
In the Slytherin house?
Sounds like a Slytherin.
Could have been a Slytherin.
He had his career high in interceptions last year.
All right.
He did.
So he played
one.
One. Hey, that's a
that's
start.
All you need.
That's a
okay.
start.
That's all you
that's
need.
A star. That's all you need.
11 games last year, 17 in 2021, and 16 in 2020.
Started.
Like a reliable guy.
21 starts over the last 2 years.
Yeah, so he had
at least a part-time starter, albeit on a not great defense. Mm-hmm. Well, not the 85 Bears defense. This was
not
the 2022
not really
Bears defense. 85, not quite the same.
No.
What we don't know yet is, you know, when the Titans claim a guy, that means someone has to go. So we don't know who that is quite yet, who is going to be bumped in place of Kendall Vildor, but that is the one waiver claim that the Titans have made. Let's get some of your thoughts on this. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Frankie is on the line with a thought on the ego with the Tennessee Titans. What's up, Frankie?
Hey, I just want to kind of break into that conversation. I don't think, you know, maybe in an NFL locker room, which I haven't spent a lot of time in, but, you know, in entertainment and in that whole world, I think ego's a negative. You know, I think confidence is an absolute must, but I think you can be 100% confident but not have an arrogant or an egotistical personality. So I agree with you that Vrabel's, you know, his ego has seen some of those podcasts and some of that stuff, and there's a lot of ego there, and I agree with that. But to me, ego is tied with insecurity and just a turnoff, and you can be 100% confident, believe you're the guy, believe you're the person. But as far as ego, I'm just not that. I'm not into that. And I think you can be super successful without it in really any genre. But, of course, Deep Mace, you can speak towards the NFL locker room better than I could.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call,
Frankie. Thank you, Frankie. Appreciate it. And he's right. There is this fine line between it's sort of – and I wouldn't even say ego. I think it's arrogance and confidence. I think in his world, thing that you're tasked at doing, and if you feel that you are one of the best at it, I think the ego comes not necessarily, it comes from the hard work that you put in. Like, I know I put in a lot of hard work, and I've been successful. I have an ego, but I don't allow my ego to sort of infiltrate the team. I don't allow it to be a bad thing in a sense. And it's not on display all the time. I don't use it to hold over people. I don't use the ego or the arrogance sort of to show that I'm better than you in every situation that comes up. I'm not trying to do that. But my ego and my confidence allows me to do my job at a high level, but also having the sensitivity to know there are other people in this room, you know, with good ideas. I'm going to listen. And sometimes, more times than not, I'm going to agree and we're going to collaborate and do it. But it's not going to take away from the ego that I have. It's just there because I'm confident in what I'm doing. You know, in this situation, as a player, my ego was through the roof when I was on the field. It had to be.
As a receiver?
Yeah.
You have to have a big ego.
It had to be, but I had confidence too.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an arrogance. Like, I knew that if I didn't do my job the way I was supposed to do it, that the guy across from me could shut me down at any moment. So I kept that ego or in check, in a sense, in regards to that. But it was there. You had to have it because you're in a room full of egos, man or woman. When you get to that level, whether it be a CEO, whatever, when you get to that level and everybody in that room is on par, there's a bunch of egos in that room, but you know how to check your ego. It's like, okay, I check my ego. What's the old saying? Check your ego at the door.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I'm saying you shouldn't have it, but when you're in a room, a team environment, check it at the door. Let it come out when it's supposed to, when we're on a playing field. Let it come out against that other team, not amongst the guys that we're trying to work hard to achieve one goal. Let it come out against that team that we're playing.
And I think as far as Vrabel is concerned, I mean, I don't think that you can listen to a single Vrabel press conference without thinking that Mike Vrabel has a certain level of ego and arrogance about him.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that part of that makes him a good coach.
Exactly.
And I do think that part of that is necessary in a cutthroat world like the National Football League. But the point is to make sure that that arrogance doesn't put you in a position that hurts the team.
Mm-hmm.
like last season when we were wondering, like how in the world does Todd Downing still have a job? Mm-hmm. Was part of that Mike Vrabel's arrogance, not wanting to admit that the guy that he brought in to coordinate this offense was not doing a very good job, or was part of it something completely different? I don't know. But that's just one example of Mike Vrabel, and I think that you can find several examples across coaches and players across the National Football League. Mike Vrabel absolutely has a level of arrogance to mm-hmm. him. But is that a positive thing for this team, or will it get to a point where it's a negative thing for this team?
Well, it's only a negative if you don't allow other people
to If you let your arrogance check. Cloud your
yeah,
judgment.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't allow other people to sort of check that arrogance mm-hmm. or that ego, then it becomes a problem. But if you're quick to listen and understand, then your ego should never come in a way of what's good for everybody else. The ego only comes into effect when I'm not willing to open up my ears and listen to what, you know, we have. This show is a prime example. If neither one of us were willing or able to put our ego, aside and listen to one another, we would never get anything said on this show. It'd just be one after this. We'd just interrupt each other one by one. Now, it happens sometimes, and that's cool. It just happens in the conversation. But I think most of the time, at least with this show, it's, okay, I may not agree with that person, but I'm going to let that person finish their thought. And, okay, then I'm going to give my thought on it. My ego says, jump in there right now. If I'm not willing to listen, my ego says, jump in there right now. Cut him or her off right now and set it straight. Well, no. My ego is telling me, allow them to get out what they're going to get out. And I just may agree with them if I let them finish their thought out. You know, some people allow their egos to just jump in there and cut them off, and it ends up being not the right thing for a team environment.
It's a fine line to walk between mm-hmm. your own ego and respect for everyone
exactly.
else that you work with.
But I think, by and large, we would say his players enjoy playing for him.
Yeah. Oh,
so whatever ego he has, and I think that could be a little different category than stubbornness, right?
Yeah.
If he's just stubborn and loyal to his coaches, right? That could be a strength, but also a weakness. You know, you're like, doggone it, I refuse to believe I didn't hire the right guy here. This is my guy. I'm sticking by my guy as long as I can. I think he's got a little bit of that in him.
Yeah.
But I think, and on the other side, I think whatever ego he's got, his players are feeding off. I think he creates an energy and environment where people are in the trenches with him.
Mm-hmm. And that's the positive side of things.
Yeah.
That I think Mike Vrabel can use bulletin board material better than any other coach in the National Football League. College football is finally back, and so is our college football game of the week. So tune into 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for Tennessee versus Virginia, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest non-conference games across the country. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow, will join us coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.